From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on stage at the 2017 Grammy Awards. A Webster native, Kate Lee, captivated the crowd with her powerhouse vocals. Kate Lee is now Kate Lee O'Connor, and she plays with the star-studded O'Connor Band. The band was invited to perform at the Grammys because they were nominated for a Grammy in the category of Best Bluegrass Album. Their performance was electric, and fittingly, they were later announced as the winner in their category. Just a couple of years out of college, Kate Lee was now on top of the music world. Or maybe she would describe it differently. She's been working on her music career since her high school days, but winning a Grammy doesn't mean she's reached the top. It's not the end. Kate Lee is back in Rochester this week, performing tomorrow night at the Eastman Theater. The O'Connor Band will bring their high-energy, tightly composed bluegrass music to the Eastman Theater for an 8 p.m. concert. Kate Lee O'Connor, welcome back to WXXI. I was trying to figure out the last time you were here. I know you were here in 2009. We're going to have some fun with that. When's the last time you were here?
Well, I've been here several times on Scott Regan's show.
On Scott's show, yeah.
But it's always such an amazing thing to be back here. I love this studio.
It's home for you.
It is.
We like to claim you.
Yeah.
It's great to have you back here. And Forrest, welcome to you as well. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great. It's been a busy week here in Rochester.
Mm. I was asking before the program began where Forrest grew up, because, you know, Kate is a Webster Schrader. Not a Webster Thomas grad, Webster Schrader.
Webster Schrader.
Though now, as a Webster grad, you love them both. You have to love them both.
I love them both. They have the phrase now, one Webster. So they're trying to kind of integrate the schools more. And
you got a chance to hang out with them this week?
Yeah, we did several presentations at both the high schools where some of the middle schools and elementary schools, some of their music students were bust over to the auditorium, so it was a really full audience, and we talked about the history behind American music, and we also played some of our O'Connor Band material and hopefully inspired some students.
That's great. It's always great to get back, I know, and Forrest was saying before the program began, you grew up in part Nashville, part Montana?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where did you spend most of your childhood?
Yeah, I was born in Nashville and lived there till I was 12 and then moved to Montana with my mom. Yeah, so definitely grew up around a lot of music. But yeah, it was helpful, I think, in a lot of ways to have those different experiences.
Everybody says the best bluegrass comes from Montana.
It's amazing how much good bluegrass is there.
Nobody says that.
No, you'd be surprised. Check this out. So they have a really good scene there. There are some good bands. Actually, one of the kind of top up-and-coming bluegrass jam bands right now, the Little Smokies, is from there. And somehow in Bozeman, Missoula, they have a scene that's really growing. Yeah, it's really cool.
Does it feel almost like a little Nashville, little Austin kind of a thing?
It doesn't. I mean, it is very different. You know, I grew up in Missoula, which is like the western, it's kind of nestled in the mountains. And so it has the sort of Pacific Northwest feel. I mean, Portland is a cool music scene, Portland, Oregon, and it feels like a mini Portland to me. So it's different because there's not really like an industry presence there. It's just a much more organic scene. But it was cool to see that side of it too, because obviously somewhere like Nashville's so commercial and such a headquarters for the industry. But yeah, and just to have different experiences like in life and with different people. And, you know, I never hunted or skied or anything like that in Nashville. And then you just meet people from all walks of life. And that was really cool and informative, I think, for writing and just in life.
Yeah.
In
and so you went back to Nashville when you were how old?
I was like 24. So yeah, I moved back after I met Kate. And yeah, we had a mutual friend just introduce us and we hit it off. And it was like the end of 2013 and started kind of, you know, singing songs and wanting to write stuff together. And I figured I was living in Boston at the time. So it was another place where I went to school there and had stayed there for a couple of years. And it's a cool music scene there as well. But I do think at a certain point, if you're going to try to make a go for it, you have to move to one of the major hubs. And so it was kind of thinking about that anyway. And then that just push it over the top.
Well, the O'Connor Band has had a tremendous few years. And before we get back to what's going on now and the recent successes, let's go back a little bit with you, Kate, to remind our listeners that I think your first appearance on XXI was 09, but it might have even been before that. 09, Julia Figueres was interviewing you on, let's see here, it was, do you remember what song you played when you were on WXXI in 2009? I'm going to quiz you here.
I think it was the song Beige.
Beige!
Where where I love Julia Figueres, and I was kind of joking with her because she was wearing a beige suit, and the song is about kind of figuratively not being beige and being colorful, though much of my apartment has beige in it, so I'm not against beige. But, it was the onstage concert.
Onstage, yep. It was onstage, WXXI TV, February 2009. And we've got a little bit of sound of Kate doing beige.
The color of darkness deep in the night. Emotions come easy, like colors they flow. I have little to hide, and I have nothing to show. But my heart can stay locked tight.
Who wrote Beige, by the way?
Me and my dad wrote Beige.
That's great.
A co-write. And my dad really was the first person who told me that writing my songs would make a really big difference. He saw that I came home from school and would be practicing all the time, and it music was my outlet from a very young age. But, you know, he told me that, you know, if you want to stand out from the rest of the people who are also really great musicians, you should also try writing some of your material. And he helped me with a lot of that. Even though he's not a trained musician himself, he had a lot of really great life experience, and he was just learning to write songs himself. And so we kind of learned together.
What was the first memory you have of picking up a fiddle?
I actually just told this to the Webster School students. I was in third grade, and the Webster Schools District offered it as one of their many instruments that they offer. I tried out a bunch. They recommended flute and violin because I'm very small, and I was definitely very small then. Mm-hmm. And so they said, probably not the bass. And so I don't know exactly what it was, but I was immediately drawn to violin. I remember telling my parents that there's some form where your parents had to sign off on what instrument you were going to choose. And I remember telling them, you're going to sign off on violin. I want to play it so bad. And then I got a rental violin. I think it was from the String House. And that's where I've gotten all my violins.
I think it was around third grade when I was growing up that they gave some school districts probably give kids roughly the same kind of choices on stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing a violin and a viola, and I thought they looked cool. And my mother at the time had an 8-track of John Denver Live. And I thought, I definitely want to play Thank God I'm a Country Boy.
That's so cool.
And so I picked up the violin or the viola, maybe. It's a little hazy now. Mm-hmm. And after like one session, I'm like, when do I play Thank God I'm a Country Boy? I'm like, that's going to be very, very hard. And I thought, I do not have the patience. And then it was over for me. And did you take to it quickly?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't playing extremely advanced stuff quickly, but I had a knack for learning the simple basics mm-hmm. pretty well pretty soon. But I think it's just because I practiced a lot, just because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and this is kind of what I wanted to ask you, is because I remember in, you know, talking to you in various media platforms like 2011, 2010, you know, that you were this rising star and you were clearly going to be great.
Oh, thank
but,
you.
But you also were, at least in my estimation, more grounded and a little bit less. Every family is excited, but we meet a lot of people in the media. You meet a lot of stage parents or a lot of sort of, you know, parents who want to groom kids to be stars, and that's great. And obviously your family roots for you.
Mm-hmm.
How did you balance, you know, trying to become very good at your craft, to get publicity for what you were doing, and also sort of leading a normal life as much as possible?
I guess that's a good question, but you know, I'm still working really hard to get to a certain level, and I still feel like I haven't made it yet, per se. You know, who knows what that means? But it's like, maybe if I had gotten really well known or, I don't know, famous or something at a young age, that would have really messed with my head or something. But for the most part, it was really good, positive attention, but it wasn't overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't too much too soon.
No, mm-hmm. I don't think so. A lot of it was through school and playing with friends of mine who played music as well. So I got a lot of time to hang out with kids my own age too, and a lot of times music kind of facilitated that.
But what does making it really mean then, if you don't still consider yourself as having made it?
Yeah, I don't know what it means. I think, you know, we've even talked to Forrest's dad, Mark, who's now my father-in-law, and I guess you don't ever feel like I don't know, maybe if you get to be such a huge superstar, you can't deny it.
Like, literally, if you walk down the street and everyone knows your name.
Yeah, maybe at that point, mm-hmm. you can't deny it. But otherwise, I think you're just always trying to get your music out there more and get better. I still feel like I'm becoming a better singer and musician.
Sure, I'm with you. Yeah. Does Mark O'Connor think he's made it?
Man, I mean, yes and no. I think it's always this push and pull of when you get to a certain level, you want to maintain it. And I think that's what any entertainer, but probably, you know, athlete feels like that. Although with sports, you know, everyone knows there's a very clear window of time where you have a prime, except maybe like golf or something like that. But with entertainment, you know, a lot of, like, even my favorite artists played until pretty much the day they died. You know, we have heard stories of some people that literally die on stage. Like, I mean, people are doing it till the very end. And so there's a sense of, like, if you get to a certain point in your career, you want to maintain that. And if you're not only competing with people, kind of your peers or something at that point, but then when you reach it, then there are always the new people coming up. And then if you start to, like, fall a little bit or feel like you don't have the same visibility or presence that you did, then I think it still feels like you need to kind of make it again, or you have to do something to stay relevant. And obviously it's a job. A lot of people who are not really involved in it think, if you're just even able to say, like, act or play shows, then it's like, it's all fun from there, but it's really tough and the money is not good for most people doing it as a profession. And, so I think if you're still thinking kind of month to month, or you're always thinking of it as a job. And like you said, yeah, if you're walking down the street or something and everyone recognizes you or something, and you have a savings that is significant enough to kind of not have to worry about doing a bunch of gigs or something like the very next month, then maybe that's a different story. But yeah, I think the ones who succeed the most are always the hungriest, and that never, like, totally goes away.
Well, we'll let our listeners decide if they think that Kate and Forrest have made it. Let's listen to a little bit of Ruby, Are You Mad at Your Man from the Grammys. And I want to say that before you listen to this clip, the first comment, you never want to read the comment section at YouTube. This is toxic, right? This is the first comment of many on the YouTube site where this song is from. I'm going to quote it. That's not dynamite. That's nitroglycerin in a pressure cooker with Blow Mind bluegrass. I love that.
That's awesome.
It's like the nicest thing on YouTube that's ever been written.
Yeah.
So let's listen to it.
Thank you.
So who's Ruby? Who wrote that song?
Cousin Emmy wrote that song, and she was, I think her real name was Mae Carver, and she was a vaudeville act in the early 1900s. And then it became a bluegrass standard when the Osborne Brothers covered it, I think in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And it's been covered by a lot of artists. But we're probably one of the more unique covers because it's a female singing it. Although I know Rhiannon Giddens also does a really cool version of Ruby.
What was that like performing that night? Set the scene for us a little.
It was nerve-wracking for sure. You know, it's funny because we were nominated for the Grammy for Best Bluegrass Album, but I wasn't even really thinking about whether we were going to win that or not, because all I was really thinking about was doing the performance, which was before they announced our category. So it was a little bit nerve-wracking, but they gave us a really great rehearsal time the day before, and we got to run through it a bunch of times with their production crew, and it was over before we knew it. I mean, it's such a fast song, made faster by nerves. And
yeah. There's no click tracks on stage.
No.
And I don't know, Forrest, do you want to add anything
to that? What was that like for you?
Yeah, well, one thing that's interesting about it, it's so fast that, especially for the rhythm instruments, me and Joe Smart is the name of the our guitarist, and for him and me in particular, it's a real workout for the right arm, you know, chopping and strumming. When we initially recorded that song for the first album that we did, Coming Home, it was one of the few, there were some where we did overdubs, like most of the songs actually had overdubs on them, but that one we wanted to just capture like live, kind of just get the vibe of it in the studio. It's tough to do that where you're kind of trying to, you know, lay a mandolin chop again over a guitar track that's already kind of taken place. Like, you just kind of want to get it. I think maybe we did it 4 times. It was like 3 or 4 in the studio. And by that point, you can't do it anymore. It's just like you've run out of steam. And the day before the Grammy performance, we had, you know, the production crew was great and we had soundcheck for it, but soundcheck went on literally for an hour. We played it more times on that stage rehearsing than we did in the studio. I think we did it 5 times all the way through. And at that pace, it was like, I mean, I went home and my arm had never hurt that much from playing before. I was actually worried I wouldn't be able to play the next day, like the day that we had the show, because I could like not bend it all the way. And it was like, that was so intense. But it's one of the funny things about that song. On the Grammys, it was probably the fastest we ever did it. But we never quite know how fast it's going to be until Joe plays the 3 notes on the guitar that kind of lead up to the main first chord. So he sets the tempo. So there's always this like kind of lingering tension in the air for me, because it's a workout and it's like, please, Joe, don't go, you know, too fast. And then like sometimes he'll just rip into it and then we have to keep up. Like, we can't slow down. And that one was particularly fast.
I love the idea, though, of not wanting to be overproduced, even in a studio setting, because, I mean, there's a couple of guys from Texas I grew up listening to, Jack O'Neill and Kerry Pierce, and Pierce had a song called Vineyard that was a great live song, and I think they did 10 albums, and I bet you Vineyard was on 8 of them, because they just kept chasing it, and it was never as good as it was live.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jack and Kerry, if you want to listen to this online and tell me I'm wrong, I come on and play Vineyard on the program anytime. But there's just something about some songs live and the danger of overproducing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine sometimes you're in the studio and you think, you know, does it sound too round? Is it too clean? You know?
Yeah.
That's something I actually really learned just recently in my experiences recording with O'Connor Band, because I grew up doing quite a bit of recordings, in Rochester, and I think we made some really great recordings. And at that time, being a young artist, I think it was really important for me to focus on just getting everything as good as possible, laying down separate tracks and then putting them together and creating a product that was really planned out, I think was really important for me at that time. But now with O'Connor Band, there definitely is that element. You know, now we're at, I think, a different level in that we can do some more recording that feels more live, where we're getting a lot of full takes and then maybe adding to them or maybe not. But it depends on the song. Some songs we do, there's tons of overdubbing if that's the aesthetic that we're after. But then there's others where it really, we want to get that live feel. And I didn't really realize that about recording until I started recording with this band, that that sometimes it's better for it to feel more real than perfect.
I imagine also with a band as outstanding as O'Connor Band is live, I would think you wouldn't want to record something in a studio that you can't recreate live.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's been really, there were a couple, instances of us kind of debating that, you know, whether we should go out in the production and overlay a bunch of stuff. And then I think we've, generally erred on that side of, you know, being able to do something that we can reproduce.
And this band is so good live. It's so good live. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Kate Lee O'Connor and Forrest O'Connor there from the O'Connor Band and Grammy Award winners. We should probably tell people why you're even in town. You get back to town once in a while, right? Because she's a Webster Schrader graduate. And you're back in town. Why? What brings you here this week?
We're performing at the Eastman Theater on Friday at 8 o'clock.
Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock at the Eastman Theater.
Yeah.
Are you sold out yet?
We're very close.
Okay.
But there are still some tickets left, so we would love to sell it
out.
But
don't just show up. Definitely get tickets.
Yes, because it could sell out, you know, online. So get them online.
Okay. 8 o'clock, Eastman Theater on Friday night. Always a great show. Kate Lee was one of these people who a lot of people in the local media met her, liked her personally because she's such a nice person, but an enormous talent. And when you graduated, you eventually got down to Nashville. When did you get down there? When did that happen?
I graduated in 2010, and then I moved that September actually it was August, to start school at Belmont University there. And then I just stayed there after graduating from Belmont because I really like living there.
Nashville, for those who have not been there, you know, give me a sense for what it is like for an 18-year-old who wants to make it in music, going down there, seeing the scene, and trying to get your head around, you know, what you're about to be a part of.
It's really overwhelming because I had so much great support from this whole Rochester family and friends connection that I have. And then going to Nashville, where I didn't know anybody, that was hard, but I think for me the right move was going to college and getting a network going through that experience at college. And I may not have met Forrest if it weren't for that, because we were introduced by a producer who I met through a series of connections, and one of those connections was through my teacher at college, my violin teacher.
And certainly that has worked out for the O'Connor Band. It's worked out for both of you personally. And Kate, can you also give me a sense for the decision-making and the challenge of wanting to make it in music? And with YouTube, there's a lot of so-called YouTube stars. There's a lot of people who've got hundreds of thousands of views for each cover, often covers, but sometimes originals they'll do on YouTube. You've done a lot of great stuff on there.
Yeah.
I could watch Aces all day. You did a lot of great stuff on there.
Thank you.
But you don't want to just be a YouTube star,
right,
or just a cover star. What were you thinking about when you're recording your own music, when you're doing covers, when you're trying to get people to see you, you're trying to use different platforms, but you don't want to be pigeonholed? I mean, what was that process like for you?
There always seems to be this kind of debate that you have as yourself as an artist of, do I do this because it's what I think people want, or it might be more commercial, or do I do this because it's what I want and because it seems to be my like artistic calling, I guess, at the time. And I mean, that's still a debate, to be quite honest, I have with myself probably on at least a weekly basis. And we do as a band too, but the only thing I know to say to that, I guess, is I can't do anything that I don't believe in. So I like to do things that are more accessible. I like to do things that are even more commercial, but I have to feel like it's true to myself and I can sell it, you know?
Whether it's Ruby or Aces, take me through the mindset of doing a cover, knowing the history of some of the great music that you guys have decided to cover.
Yeah.
Do you want to give it your own vibe? Do you want to do justice to an original? You know, are you thinking about previous performances?
It depends, but for the most part, I like to put something in it that's different. Otherwise, I don't really a lot of times see the point unless it's a performance and somebody just wants to see a live version of their favorite song, but done very similarly. But for the most part, I want to make it different.
What do you think, Forrest?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's right. I think one of the cool things about this band is that the sensibilities we bring to it automatically make things kind of different, like right off the bat. So it doesn't really, it kind of just falls into place. Like we're not, you know, just like a guitarist, you know, standing there with one vocal mic and it's like, all right, how do I rearrange this
to
do a different like fingerstyle pattern or something?
Yeah.
And so the textures that, you know, you can create with a few fiddles and, you know, it could be multiple mandolins, it could be multiple guitars that we have because we have, you know, we travel with several, you know, different instruments in addition to the ones that are our main ones. We got Klahammer banjo. And so that's one of the cool things is that we have a lot to experiment with the band specifically. I think it is more challenging when you're more limited with your materials. And I think like Kate said, it's just, you have to feel a connection with it and you have to discover something in a song that you feel can or should be expressed that hasn't been yet. And then, certainly plenty of people do it just to try to get attention, like you're talking about with YouTube stars. It might not really be much different from maybe the original would sound anyway. And you know, there is a whole scene in the music world for that. Like a lot of cover bands are, you know, people kind of want them to play it the way it sounds on the record. It's like, because maybe that band isn't around anymore or something, or they're just going out live one night and they don't care as much about the creative interpretation as they do just hearing a song they love. And so there are different reasons to do it, you know, different ways. But I think for us, we're just in this situation where there's automatically kind of a different approach we'll take just by virtue of the instruments we're playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that.
I mean, you're hearing from a former Tennessee State mandolin champion.
Yeah, yeah.
Mandolin is, my 5-year-old has a mandolin, but he didn't have anybody who can teach him how to play it.
Neither did I.
Neither did you?
I mean, I could have asked my dad, but I just taught myself because in general, there aren't that many mandolin teachers out there, or certainly not teachers who played mandolin as their first instrument. Actually, that's really rare to find. It's become a little more, I mean, prominent is a relative word because it's still an unusual instrument. But ever since, you know, Nickel Creek and Chris Thiele burst onto the scene, obviously Chris is now doing the NPR, what was Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's becoming now, or it's Live From Here.
He's doing the show formerly known as Prairie Home.
Yeah, formerly, right. That's what
live,
it will be
live
called.
From here, yeah,
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 yeah. You know, he inspired sort of a new generation of young musicians to make mandolin their first main instrument. And Sierra Hull is someone we've played with. She's a really great, one of my favorite mandolin players. But it's rare for people to have that as their main, as their like first primary instrument. And that was, for me, not the first one I played, but the first one I cared about. And I don't know why that is, because I played piano and guitar and even fiddle for a little bit. But that was the first one that really kind of mattered to me that I wanted to put time into. But it's hard to find a teacher, even if you're in, you know, a big city.
By the way, I keep wondering how often I'm going to hear O'Connor on the show formerly known as Prairie Home Companion, because what Chris has brought even more of a music sensibility to it, and more live performance and so.
Yeah.
You know.
I know.
Yeah.
But you guys have enough going on. Like, you need to go do that.
It'd be fun to go out there and do
we,
it, though.
We would love it.
Yeah.
That's one that you would say yes to?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So if they're listening out there,
Chris, call us up. We'll do it.
Let's get our only break of the hour. When we come back, I want to talk about songwriting. We'll listen to some more of the music from Kate and Forrest and the O'Connor Band. And you'll hear more about some of the work they have put together if you have missed it. They're online where, by the way, guys?
O'ConnorBand.com.
Piece of cake. Yep. O'ConnorBand.com. Kate Lee O'Connor, Forrest O'Connor, our guests for the hour. Let's get this break and come right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, Rochester did not make the cut for Amazon's list of finalists for their second headquarters. Why is that? What does it mean about the proposal that was submitted? And what's the path forward for economic development? We'll discuss it first hour. Second hour, a local magazine profiled the Rochester comedy scene and largely excluded women. Women say that's indicative of the struggles they face in comedy. We'll discuss that. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. O'Connor Band has Kate Lee O'Connor, Forrest O'Connor, and of course, you know, there's other O'Connors as well. In fact, I was going to ask Kate about the fact that, you know, you guys do a lot of interesting collaboration. I want to ask about writing music, especially because it's with in-laws now. Is there any added pressure that, you know, your father-in-law, you know, writing music and performing?
Yeah, I'm maybe a little bit, although I feel more pressure trying to play violin next to Mark O'Connor, because writing, our styles are pretty different. Mark is mostly focused on, I mean, he has such an incredible body of work with his instrumental writing. And I do more singer-songwriter kind of writing. But I'm not as prolific as Forrest, actually. There are several people in town. Pat Alger is one of them, who's one of my favorite writers, who wrote a lot of great songs for Garth Brooks and other country artists. And he and I get together quite a bit. And there are others. And I write some on my own, too. It has been harder, I have to say, being on the road and not being home a lot. I do have a hard time writing and being in that mind frame, I guess, when I'm on the road.
And so when you guys are home, do you set aside time to write? Does it happen more organically when it strikes you?
For me, more organically, which maybe just says something about my discipline, but or lack of.
No.
But Forrest actually just recently took a span of time, and I guess about a month, and you wanted to prove to yourself that you could write a lot of material, and you did.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah, I think, you know, the organic versus, like, do you kind of force yourself to do it is probably, it's a common question for that process for songwriting. And I just think it's a matter of, like, balance. Like, I think you can't help if you get an idea. And I feel like when I'm walking around or on tour or anything, I'll always get a bunch of ideas. But actually fleshing them out is a different thing. I think that's what requires discipline. Like, for me, it's like, I might get the seed of an idea that I know will be a good seed of an idea, but rarely will you get an entire song, like including a whole lyric concept and trajectory and melody and bridge and like rhythm and everything that like comes to you just totally organically. Usually I think it's something that needs to be fleshed out, you know, and that requires some effort. But if you're inspired enough by the idea that just comes to you when you wake up one morning or something, then that might be enough. Hopefully, at least that's how it's been for me. One thing I was going to say, though, about what's interesting about the show that the O'Connor Band does, and one of the reasons it's so unique, is that it's made up of material from very different people and also eras. Because the set, it has some songs that we've written, but it also has a lot of instrumental music and arrangements my dad has made over, like, literally the last 30 years. So it's like one of those, it's not a set that you could just kind of get a group of people in the room together and construct, because it's so influenced by specific periods of time. I mean, the 80s and 90s and the 2000s and different people he worked with, like, you know, Yo-Yo Ma or Bela Fleck or something. It's like, you can't just kind of make that up. And that's actually one of the reasons that our set, it has evolved some over the last couple of years, but it's actually, it hasn't changed as much as you might think. Like, it's not like every few months we're writing a bunch of new material as a band or something. Usually, actually, it's one of us bringing something to the, you know, to a band meeting or something like that, and then we kind of flesh it out there. So it's really what it is as we've seen it develop, is like a snapshot, or maybe not just a snapshot. It's more like a picture of my dad's career. And then the newer songs that we've introduced to it are like the more recent part of his career. And also, you know, he spent several years as a session fiddler in Nashville. And so it's there's that part of it too, because he's played on, you know, hundreds of like great vocal recordings. And so that's really what the show is, and that it makes it different, but it's also a little different from what you might think a band would be doing on a regular basis, you know, getting together and always thinking of new ideas and stuff
sure,
like that.
Sure. I want to listen to some of what I think Kate just referenced. Pat Alger?
Yes, I did. Yep.
Old Black Creek?
Yep, that's a song that came out of that writing relationship. Yep, we co-wrote that one.
When did you guys write that?
That's a good question. I think it was when I was still in college, so between 2010 and 2014, one of those years, probably 2012.
All right, let's listen to
2012.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Old Black Creek.
Old Black Creek, don't run fast by my door. Just outside my bedroom and north of the kitchen. Black Creek, don't run fast by my door.
How much of that's Kate Lee and how much of that's Pat Alger?
Well, a lot of that one is Kate Lee because it's about Black Creek, which is somewhere in between Rochester and Buffalo.
Yes, and local ties.
Yeah. So I was just driving one day and saw there was a sign along the highway, something like that, and saw the words Black Creek and kind of got an idea for how this song was starting to go in my head. Kind of made up this completely fake story around it. So unfortunately, it's not very autobiographical. It's more imaginative. But then, I mean, so much of it is Pat too, because he's really taught me about how to structure a song, and he has really great melodic ideas. He really plays a lot like a jazz guitarist, even though he's written a lot of country songs. He just has such a wide chord vocabulary and just knows how to use all the chords in a really cool way. My writing relationship with him usually kind of goes in this way, in that I have an idea, and it might be a verse or a chorus or maybe even both, and sometimes as little as a few lines. And then I go into his office and we talk about it, and then over the course of an hour or so, we'll finish the song. And usually I really like it right away, and then after that I have to look back and see if I still like it after a few days. Mm-hmm. But many of them I do. And Pat writes incredibly fast. That's why I think we're able to pretty regularly finish a song when we're writing together. I mean, a lot of these writing dates or whatever that you get with other writers, you're fleshing out ideas and you may make some good progress, but you might not come out with a full song. But I almost always do with Pat, because he knows how to, like, if I'm blocked on something, he knows how to take it in another direction and see it through to the end, which is important, because a lot of times as writers we leave things half finished, and even if the completed product is not exactly what we want, it's good to get to that point and have a completed product.
Yeah, I think Pat, I don't want to speak out of school if I'm wrong here, I mean, he's written songs everyone listening knows, like Unanswered Prayers, I think,
yeah,
by Garth Brooks. And,
yep, that's Pat.
And I always wonder what people, you know, think of as a great songwriter, because Pat and Kate, what Kate's describing is Pat is someone who's not just a songwriter in his own right, but he's kind of a song doctor or an editor in the same way that when a writer brings a book to a copy editor, having gone through that process myself, I thought, this isn't going to even be my work. They're going to take this apart. It's not going to be my voice. And then it comes out of it and you go, wow, this is, it feels totally me, but it's better. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's how you feel about Pat, that it still feels like your work.
Yeah, it still does. And a lot of times it feels almost like he may not even know this, but like when I'm getting together with him, a lot of times I feel like I just had a therapy session or something because we're like talking about everything I thought about for the song so that he can really understand where it's coming from and help me to complete it. So I definitely feel myself in the song very strongly, even if he has taken a seed and helped me run with it.
The clock is running too quickly, so let's scroll through some other stuff before we lose the hour with Kate Lee O'Connor and Forrest O'Connor from the O'Connor Band. They're going to be playing Friday night, 8 p.m. at the Eastman Theater. Do not wait to just show up there. Get your tickets to the Eastman box now because they'll be gone, and for good reason. So let's listen to a little bit of Always Do. And before we do that, Forrest, a little backstory on Always Do.
This was written by my best friend from college, Jim Shirey, who also is a great guitar player, and he traveled around with Kate and me for like a year. We played songs, played shows as a trio all around the country. And yeah, I met him his first day of college, and we hit it off right off the bat. We both had super long hair. We do like kind of open mics on campus. I'd play mandolin, you know, do solos for his songs, and we're still very close friends today.
All right, this is Always Do. All right, so that's Always Do, and it's got a great video. We'll make sure that we've got links to all of this stuff that you can check out. So we'll post those links. You can not only hear the music, but watch some of the stuff. We'll do some of the live stuff as well. Kate, how do you feel about doing Always Do? It's a beautiful song.
Yes, I love that song. And that's, you know, we were just talking about like ownership and how you feel that for your own songs, but when you've co-written them. And this is one that I had no part in writing at all, but every time I sing it, I still feel a lot of ownership over it. And maybe it's because I heard the song right away when it was just a baby song, and our friend Jim wrote it, and he wrote it for my voice in mind is what he tells me, and I guess just singing it and playing around with the arrangement of it, it's kind of taken on, or I've taken it on as my own, which feels really great.
For listeners who are just hearing O'Connor Band, there's some outstanding recorded music. It's great live performance. And before we lose them, I want to ask both of you, what's coming up now? I mean, your first show you ever did was less than 3 years ago. And then in 2017, about a year ago now, last February, you're picking up a Grammy for Best Bluegrass. And now, 2018, what's it look like for you, Forrest?
We have a few more shows this spring. And we sat in with the Zac Brown Band for a run of four shows last October. And that kind of led to recording a little bit with him in November. Not totally sure what is going to come of that or how it will be released, but hopefully released pretty soon. And we're working on opening for him this summer. And we're still figuring out the logistics. He just announced his tour like a couple days ago for his band. And so that's kind of the main focus going forward this summer and fall is collaborating with Zach.
It's a great gig. And let me ask both of you this for people who are going to see O'Connor Band sometime in 2018 live for the first time. and they don't know what they're in for, what do you love hearing from people when they walk out for the first time, Forrest?
Man, what I love hearing is how tight the band is, because, you know, we all work on being tight. They like the, you know, just the texture of the instruments. It's a unique instrumentation with three fiddles. That's pretty uncommon. And so just the, like, unique sound palette that they get to experience, and also the variety, the diversity. You can go from, you know, a really fast instrumental tune that requires, you know, very accurate picking and bowing, to a really slow, soulful song that Kate sings or something. So it keeps people interested for the entire show, it seems like.
Kate, what do you want to hear from people when they walk out live for the first time?
Well, I think Forrest just said it really great. I want to hear those things. And I do want, I want to hear that we made a connection with them. You know, of course I love to hear that they're impressed, but even more than that, I want to hear that, that, you know, this is music that they're going to take home with them and is going to hopefully affect them in their lives.
Okay. And the last question I'll have for you guys is, you know, we talked a little bit about making it. I mean, everybody wants to be financially comfortable, and it's selling more records is great, and I'm sure that is in your future. But what ultimately will make you happy in music? I mean, Forrest, what's fulfilling right now? You get to play with family. It's an amazing thing. You're playing with your wife. But what is going to be fulfilling? What goals do you have?
Man, that is a tough question. I mean, I've been in several bands, you know, over the last 10 years where I've played primarily a supportive role. And I get a lot of fulfillment out of accompanying the right way, you know, not overplaying, not doing anything that seems to conflict with what we're actually performing. Personally, I've also gotten the same, if not even a little more fulfillment, with writing a set of lyrics that people identify with, being able to make that direct connection. I think it's something where, you know, anything in the entertainment business, you just don't know. I mean, everyone has a different path. There's no set path to kind of getting to a point where you feel like you've, quote, made it. And I think because it is our job and takes a lot of hard work, we want to be able to keep it our job. Whatever that means, you know, to at least be sustainable is important for us. So to be able to sustain, make connections, you know, with new audiences every day or every time we play a show is fulfilling.
Okay. Kate?
Yeah, I think all those things, and continuing to have creative control and even growing in that. I think Forrest and I have learned so much about the process of making music growing up and in this band, and I'm excited to apply that knowledge to making even better music.
Kate Lee O'Connor is a Webster graduate. You can enjoy their music Friday night, 8 p.m. Have a great show. And guys, you got to pick something for us to play us out with here. So what's the track we're going to listen to as we close Connections?
Ooh, you want to do like Coming Home or something?
That'd be great.
Cool.
Yeah. Coming Home is one that Forrest wrote for the Grammy-winning album.
All right. Coming Home, O'Connor Band, O'ConnorBand.com. See them Friday night. Our thanks to Mike Black, helping engineer this program today, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon, and we're back with you Friday on member-supported public radio.
Well, I'm still driving my daddy's van, my soul in the sky and my head in the sand, chasing a dream that withered long ago. Got aches in my back, aches in my heart, and when the music ends, the hurting starts, 'cause there ain't no freedom on an endless road. And I say, oh Lord, oh, I'll be dead before I die if I'm on my own. So I'm coming home. Well, didn't you tell me all along that sticking around's what makes you strong? 'Cause love is more than just a new romance. Now I ain't the boy you knew before, so when I end up standing at your door, I'm hoping you'll give me a second chance. And I say, oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord, I'm coming home, I'm coming home.
coming home to you. I'm coming home with the next sweet sunrise up on high. 'Cause I'll be dead before I die if I'm on my own. So I'm coming home. Die if I'm on my own. So I'm coming home.